Today on The Travel Guys.
In the travel news, turns out car crash test dummy info is based only on male dummies. And ladies are different. And we give you some wisdom on currency exchange in foreign countries.
And in our Smarter Traveler segment at 3:20, we talk about the latest screwball hotel fee. And speaking of hotel fees, there's some good news to share on that front.
I spent the last week traveling with a group of nice folks exploring many of the ghost towns in Nevada. You might want to consider this journey yourself, and I've got a host of tips at 3:35.
And at 3:50, we talk about another warning regarding public phone charging stations, particularly in airports. And WalletHub tells us what the survey says when it comes to the best and worst airlines.
Information to make you a smarter traveler. That's what we're all about. We are the Travel Guys.
On the road again.
I've been everywhere, man.
Aruba, Jamaica.
Solo Seattle.
Get your kicks on Route 66.
I was born under a wandering star.
That's entertainment.
Let's go on with the show.
Welcome, welcome everyone to another edition of the Travel and Entertainment Guys, as always brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations. Mark Hoffman and Tom Romano with you. Thanks for coming along. Mark, good to see you again. It's been a week. If you recall, last week we taped early because I had an opportunity to go to the to Game 7 of the Kings Warriors, and we mentioned on the show that we were taped and we didn't know how it all turned out. Ended, I think, around 3:15, 3:30. And, of course, everybody knows the Kings tried hard but didn't finally get it done. So enough of that. Let me see here. We talked before the show. You were going to bring me up to date on...
Everybody has markers in their life, you know, people or places or events that, and then later when you're reminded of them, you reflect back on them. And yesterday, a baseball player passed, Vida Blue, who had pitched for the A's and the Giants back in the previous century and then had been a part of the Giants front office for many years, passed away. And it was just kind of, he was a star when I was growing up, and quite a star, hit the scene with a big splash. And so his passing just was kind of a marker. You know, you think back on things that you did and places that you were, and how that never had the opportunity to meet the man. But when you're a little kid and, you know, you have your heroes, and Vida Blue was one of mine. So I will miss him. He did in recent years was a part of the Giants kids program, and always had a penchant for the kids programs, for their fantasy camps and stuff like that. Interacting with the fans was kind of his specialty. And because he pitched for teams on both sides of the bay, he was quite a popular guy. So farewell to Vida Blue.
There you go. All right. Mark and Tom here with you. And at the top of every Travel Guys radio show, we take some time out to bring you up to date on the travel news. And, of course, with the news, once again, here's Mark Hoffman. Mark?
I had a headline there that talked about the fact that apparently it has now dawned on the folks in charge that if you're studying car crashes and what happens to people inside vehicles in car crashes, which lots of us travel by automobile, whether it's to get to our destination or by car once we get there. And so now we're looking at getting funding to make sure that we study the use of female crash dummies in car testing also. Because in case nobody ever noticed this before, women are put together differently than men are. They have bumps and curves in different places than men do. I'm guessing that this never dawned on anybody before, but perhaps it has now. And anyway, what they're finding out is that computer models are showing them that women and women's bodies react very differently because of the fact that they're built a little differently than men do in car crashes. So all of this information that they've compiled over the years is all based on male crash dummies, and now they're thinking that perhaps we should be broadening that scope just a little bit.
How could that possibly have gone on all this time, this long, without those that do the test dummies and all of that putting a
you really want me to tell you
there?
Because I'm guessing for a long time most of this research was done by men, and it never dawned on them. And now that we're more integrated and women are more a part of everyday jobs and positions and things than they were a quarter century ago, when most of this information was compiled, that women now have said, hey, you know, maybe it's time to look at this differently. And so now they're going to. So I just thought it was a little bit humorous that it never came up before now that, you know, that women's bodies in a car crash, in an emergency situation like that, trauma situation, might react differently than men's bodies. So therefore, the type of safety provisions that you had in cars and your seatbelt regulations and all of those types of things might need to be looked at a little differently if you looked at all of the population instead of only half the population. I'm not sure who had to be hit over the head with a hammer to know that, but anyways, I thought it was kind of fascinating. When you're traveling, just a little quick tip here, pointed out by our friend Ben Schlopik at One Mile at a Time, did an article last week on how to exchange foreign currency when you're traveling. And I know a lot of folks are probably headed off on foreign trips this summer. Perhaps some of them are inexperienced foreign travelers. And Ben makes a couple of really quick points that are worthy of sharing. If you're going overseas and you feel like you need to exchange currency, you can do it before you leave for many countries. Your bank can exchange the currency for you. And in many cases, it will be for a very nominal fee. If you're a really good customer at the bank, you may be able to get that fee waived entirely. It's probably not worth it to exchange $20 in local currency, but if you're exchanging a few hundred, then that might be a different situation. The other and best idea is to find yourself a credit card. There are a number of American Express cards that do this, and there are some other Visa and MasterCards that don't charge foreign exchange fees. So therefore, when you go to another country, you use the card. The price that's put on your card is exactly the exchange rate from that day or the day before or whatever marker that they use, and there are no additional fees. You get the exact exchange rate and no fee charged to get to convert it from the foreign currency back to U.S. currency on your bill. So just a helpful hint, if you're headed out, the thing not to do is get to a foreign country, get out on the street, see these things that say currency exchange, no commissions. Mm-hmm. And you think, wow, that's a great idea. I'll go in there. They don't charge anything. Yes, they don't charge anything. So how the heck would they pay their rent? Well, they give you a lesser exchange rate. So, for example, if you're going to Europe and the exchange rate on a euro was, I haven't looked at it for a few days, but let's pretend it's $1.10. So for each euro is worth $1.10. So for each U.S. dollar you give them, you're going to get approximately 9/10 of a euro. So this exchange station booth maybe only gives you 0.85 of a euro, as opposed mm-hmm. to 0.9. So that's where they make their profit. And usually those exchange rates are not very fair, and so you're kind of getting had. So don't exchange on the street at a currency exchange station in a foreign country. Make sure that you make those exchanges either in a bank, preferably a bank that's affiliated with yours back home, or do it before you leave or use a credit card. I thought that was an excellent tip by Ben, particularly at this time of the year.
Do you, would you suggest, I mean, you were talking about getting a credit card for use in foreign exchange. Mm-hmm. That seems like the safest way to go.
Yep.
Rather than, you know, getting a lot of cash for your trip at a bank and then having to drag that along with you.
Absolutely. And not knowing really how much cash you'll need. And also an increasing number of places now are not accepting cash. They're only accepting credit cards. I know this is happening in our country. I'm guessing it's happening in other countries also. So yes, a credit card is, and credit cards generally are 3.5-4%. Some can be as high as 5. So it doesn't hurt especially if you're going to make more than one foreign trip. If you're only going overseas for a few days and your credit card rates you for 3% or something like that, it may not be worth taking out another credit card for. But if you travel frequently, or you're making an extended trip, or you know you're going to make some purchases when you get there, then it's words to the wise. You really don't want to exchange on the street in a foreign country. And the other thing is, do you really want the people outside that store seeing you walk out of a foreign exchange store on the street in a foreign country? I mean, think about that for a minute. Do people seeing you come out of that store have a pretty good idea that you might be coming out with some amount of cash in your pocket? So just something to think about. Our friends at Travelers United have made a pitch to ask airlines to add EpiPens to their emergency kits to help save passengers' lives. This is not just for folks who have taken who are on a bad drug trip or have taken something that they shouldn't. This is also, I have a friend who carries an EpiPen because he has an allergy. And if that allergy were to activate, why, then he would need that pen to probably save his life. So this is a pretty good argument, I think, from Charlie and our friends at Travelers United, suggesting that airlines add EpiPens to their emergency kits in order to help save lives. One other little note here. If you went to the coronation this weekend in Great Britain, you probably paid a lot of money for your hotel rooms. Hotel room rates in and around London average 3.5 times their regular rate for May. In fact, there are some examples here on the chart of hotels a week or two before the coronation who were charging in the neighborhood of $200 to $300 U.S. for a room, and got between $900 and $1,100 a night for room. Here's a quote, a budget room. This is the cheapest place that these folks could find in London, $373 for a 175 square foot hotel room. Think about that. 175 square feet. That's 10 by 17. It has a pull down bed from the wall, $373 plus tax. So for those who watched it on television, you saved yourself a buck or two. Finally, announcement here from Vocal, the Voices of California. They are presenting an old-fashioned barbershop shop concert on Saturday, June the 10th. The show times are at 2 and at 7. It's going to be at Granite Bay High School up in Granite Bay. Voices of California is a nonprofit organization of the Barbershop Harmony Society. The show is on Saturday, June the 10th, showtimes at 2 and at 7. I recommend advance tickets for that. And that is your travel news for today.
And we are the Travel Guys. Don't forget now, check us out at travelguysradio.com. Also, podcasts of our show can be found there. And, of course, where you can always find us on iHeartRadio, both podcasts and the live show on Sundays. In our Smarter Traveler segment, coming up next, the latest screwball hotel fee and more right here on The Travel Guys. Stick around. Thanks for coming along. It's Mark and Tom, the Travel and Entertainment Guys, on a beautiful Sunday. It's one of those Sundays where the temperatures aren't too bad. Get out in the yard, do some stuff outdoors for a while. Some of the sun comes out for a while and then drifts behind the clouds. It's very, very nice.
It's a freaking gorgeous day. I mean, really, it is. We spent some time, we're going to talk about this in the next segment, but traveling through Nevada. And, man, we had everything from the high desert cold wind. We got snowed on one day. Had to get the heck out of Dodge in one town because we didn't have any tire chains for the motor coach. So, anyway, we'll talk about that a little bit in the next segment. For now, Mr. Thomas,
yes.
We talk probably more about bogus fees on this program than just about anything else, because there is nothing that fries me more than running it. You know, I've been in business for 44 years, and I really try hard not to stick it to my customers. I mean, not to, or charge them some fee that they have to sit there, that they get an invoice from our company for a trip, and that they would look at that and go, what in the world is that?
Mm-hmm.
What is that charge? What is a destination amenity fee? And there is a brand new one that our friends at Travelers United have pointed out. This isn't really a new fee. This is something that's been used before, but it previously perhaps had a little bit more validity. You went to a large city, and you went to your room, and in your room there was a safe. usually in the closet.
Mm-hmm.
And you could set your own combination, and you could put things like your passport and your cash and your travel documents and things in that. And if you were traveling, particularly in a foreign country with a passport, then that provided you an extra measure of safety. And it was very likely that the hotel charged you a fee of $1 or $2 a day, usually a nominal fee, for the use of that safe. And whether you, and in many cases, whether you used it or not. But as I said, in some situations, like if you were traveling, you know, in New York, or you were traveling in London or Paris or some major city, a gateway city, this would be something that probably, possibly, might be of some use to you. But now what we're seeing is that these safe fees are not in big cities. They've kind of gone away there, but they're starting to pop up in smaller cities where hotels are saying, well, there's a safe in your room, so there's a $1 or $2 or $3 or in one case a $5 a night fee for the safe. Whether you choose to use it or not, it's there, and we put it there, and we want you, your all of your belongings to be safe, and so there, that's why it's there. So it's popped up in two or three different places. I was just out on Route 66. I saw it in one place. My people didn't pay it, but I saw it on as somebody was checking into a small Best Western hotel, that there was a $1.50 safe fee. Now, you might think a $1.50 is not all that much, but if that hotel had 75 rooms, that's an extra $100 a night. They fill most of those rooms. Let's say they don't fill most of them. So let's say they only fill half of them. So it's $60 a night. Now multiply $60 a night by 365 days a year, and you get a pretty good idea that that's about $20,000 in extra revenue that that hotel would make just by charging that little bogus fee. So what it tells all of us is be on the lookout. When you go to check into a hotel, if something shows up on your bill, where checking in or checking out, or somebody asks you to sign off on a fee that wasn't part of what you were told you were going to pay to start with, you should contest it. You should balk at it. If the hotel doesn't back down, and then you're going to have to decide whether or not you want to, on principle, you want to not stay there, and what the ramifications of that might be, or whether or not you're just going to pay it. But if you push back against it, you're probably doing a favor to all other travelers who stay at that hotel in the future, because what you're telling them is that, you know, the next day, if the desk clerk sees the manager and says, you know, man, I got to tell you, that safe fee that we have, boy, last night, three or four people just lit into me over that. Are we sure that this is something that we want to do? You know, I mean, so you, it's possible that you could have some impact on something like that. So the point of this discussion is, when you see those BS fees, I don't care whether it's a hotel or anywhere else, push back on them. You know, say, what is this? I wasn't told about this before. In many cases, you may find that they will give in and take the fee off the bill. And if not, you're at least registering the fact that, hey, you know, this is BS. And if enough of us stand up against it, why, then maybe it'll cost you next time. There's nothing better than saying, you know, I'm here now and you've got me. But let me just tell you something. Because I'm here now and you've got me and you've done this to me, I'll never be here and you got me again. So you don't have to make a stink. You can just let your feelings be known.
Do you use the safe or have in the past at hotels in any city?
On very selected occasions. As a tour director, in some cases, I am traveling with tickets for a theater presentation or a ball game or admission tickets to some place that cannot be replaced. So in those cases, the Marriott Marquis in New York, where our groups stay, yes, I use the safe there. I don't recall there ever having been a fee there, but it was not uncommon years ago for hotels that had safes to charge you a fee based on your usage of it. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously, when you activate it or something, they got a signal that told you you were using the safe, and therefore they would charge a moderate fee for it. Of course, you know, a dollar on a hotel room 30 years ago that cost $100 was 1%. Now it might be $3 on that same hotel room because it might cost $300. Speaking of hotel fees,
Mm-hmm.
Something cool has happened. Marriott Hotels has announced that they will stop the resort fee deception starting May the 15th. Notice I did not say they are going to stop charging hotel resort fees, but Marriott has said that starting on the 15th of May, they are going to include all fees, such as resort destination amenity fees, on the first screen. So you log in and you ask for a Marriott hotel on the 17th of June, and all the hotels that come up on the Marriott website are going to include any resort, destination, amenity, whatever else kind of fee that they're charging. Marriott is making themselves huge heroes over this, but it is important to note that Marriott lost a lawsuit in the state of Pennsylvania over resort fees, and they lost this in 2021. We talked about this on the air. They were supposed to comply with the settlement agreement by August of 2022, but Marriott weaseled their way out of that and now are just starting to comply with it. Because they have to comply in Pennsylvania, I'll suggest to you, this is why they've decided to be, quote, good citizens, end quote, and comply all over the country. This could be a problem for Marriott, and remember, it doesn't apply. If you log on to Booking.com, it's pretty likely that the hotel rate you see for the Marriott is not going to include those fees. So if you log on to the Marriott site, it'll be apples to apples. The Marriott, the Courtyard, any of the Marriott brands are going to include all of those fees, so you'll be able to see apples to apples. But if you go onto a website that is a third-party website, any other TripAdvisor, any of those other places, it's pretty likely that you won't see the final price. So this is good news in some ways for travelers and for those of us who shop for hotel rates online, maybe not so much in other ways. It's a step forward. Just know it's not a step that Marriott took willingly. It's because they lost a court case about resort fees, and this is part of their penalty.
All right, we are the Travel Guys. Thanks for coming along. When we come back from a short time out, we're going to hit the roads of Nevada. Ghost tour time. Hey there, locally sourced. Coming to you from the big flamethrower KFBK 1530. Mark Hoffman, Tom Romano, the Travel and Entertainment Guys. Brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations. Mark, how long ago did you take your first ghost tour to Nevada? It seems to me, I don't recall that it's been going on for a long time. When did you take your first one? Do you remember which one it was?
It's been a few years. Of course, the last one was pre-COVID. So I think probably about 10 years. You know, I went down to Nevada and I met this ghost hunter. And he was an old entertainer down there, and Robert George Allen, and he introduced me to this ghost stuff, and I'm like as skeptical as the next person, maybe more. And so I thought it was very interesting, and we did his ghost hunt and stuff like that, and then we went out to some of the old ghost towns, and Robert passed away, and we took a group down to Nevada about 5 years ago, 4 or 5 years ago, just a couple days after he passed. And we went out with the ghost meters and stuff to the place that Robert used to take us. And my meter was going all over the place. And anyway, long story short, it appeared as though that maybe the man who had previously owned the tour company who had passed away was trying to communicate with me that night. And so I found that quite fascinating. Ooh. And followed, you know, all of the protocols that he had taught us. And so this was the first time I'd been back there since that instance. Robert's theory on ghosts was that not everybody dies the same, and that in some cases people don't pass cleanly from life to death, and that some people get hung up and some people don't know they're dead. And he had a number of theories, many of which seem to make perfect sense once you get into this a little bit. But anyhow, it's fun no matter whether you believe in it or you don't. It's a lot of fun. And so what we did was we flew to Las Vegas and spent two nights there so that we could see a couple attractions and go out at night to a place called Good Springs, which is where the ghost hunt takes place. And you can this is a commercial attraction, and you can purchase it. It's about $150, includes a casual dinner out at the old saloon, the Pioneer Saloon in Good Springs, and your transportation out there and the like. And narration and all kinds of information about hunting ghosts and the ghosts that are out there at the saloon and all of those types of things. So we went out there. You could do this trip two ways. You could fly to Las Vegas. If you weren't with a tour group, you could fly to Vegas, rent a car, and participate in the Good Springs thing. You wouldn't need your rental car for that, but you could rent a car and then drive round trip up to Tonopah. And we came back through Rachel. Talk about that in a second. And return your car to Las Vegas, so you'd have a round-trip rental car. It wouldn't be any more expensive. You can fly to Las Vegas on Spirit Airlines, I think, three times a day, or on Southwest like 12 or 13 times a day nonstop, so it's real easy to get there. It's real inexpensive. The round trip is less than $200 for most days, especially if you avoid Fridays and Sundays. So, or the other way you could do it is you could leave by car from Sacramento and drive to Tonopah the first night and maybe skip Rachel and just drive down to Las Vegas and then drive back up to Sacramento. It would be a lot of driving, but no matter how you do it, it's going to be a little bit of driving because some of these places in Nevada are really hard to get to. So, we did the ghost hunt. We also did a couple things in Las Vegas that were fun. We did a place called the Mob Museum, which is really kind of cool. The mob, so to speak, the mafia, organized crime, had a real stake in Las Vegas for a long time, and this tells that story. It probably isn't so much so today. They've figured out that, you know, in when it comes to gaming, the house has an advantage. You don't have to be a crook. You can just play the regular advantages, and you'll make money. So it's not so much today, but it explains that story and some of the connected stories, and it's really interesting. I mean, it's really worth going to see. We also did a fun thing at the Neon Museum. It's called Brilliant. It's a show where they project light onto old signs and make them come to life. It looks like the signs are actually lit up, and they're not. None of the signs that this show is about, this part of their show, have a single working bulb on them, but they make it look like these signs are working. It's kind of interesting. Might not be worth the $50 that they charge for it, but it was an interesting experience. The other option is at the Neon Museum is you can walk through what they call the Boneyard, where some of the signs have been restored and some have not, with a tour guide, and that's also kind of interesting. So it's something that you might want to consider in Vegas. When we left town, our big ghost day was driving from Las Vegas to Tonopah. And along the way, we stopped in a number of ghost towns or near ghost towns. Pure ghost towns where no one lives there anymore are not as plentiful as you might think. There are some of them. Rhyolite was one. But in many cases, ghost towns have a few people still living there. Or, you know, they're hoping that it someday it will return to its glory. Maybe only a few people have lived there for a long time. And maybe it's not going to return to its glory. But we had some examples of both along our route. Rhyolite was the first place we visited. It's near one of the entrances to Death Valley. It was the gold rush in this part of Nevada occurred in the beginning of the 20th century. So in the early 1900s, there was a lot of gold in Rhyolite. And Rhyolite was one of the biggest cities in Nevada. In fact, it was one of the most prosperous cities in the entire country. Had all kinds of rail service and banks and commercial buildings and the like. And you go back there today, no one lives in Rhyolite. There are still parts of some of the buildings there. There's part of a bottle house, which is kind of a cool place. It was built with bottles. Good way to build in the desert because bottles, when it comes to heat, have some special qualities that are very helpful. So there's some things to see in Rhyolite. Nearby is Beatty, good place for lunch. There's a big candy store in a place called a gas service station called Fast Eddie's. So if you have a weakness for packaged candy of you know, I'm talking See's candy, not quite the same quality, but not quite the same price either. So there's a good candy store in Beatty. As you go north, there are a variety of ghostly spots that you could stop at. We went to a place called Gold Point, where the gentleman who was supposed to meet us didn't show up, but his former partner did show up and took us around town and showed us all kinds of cool things, opened up the saloon and the like so we could go in and look around. Gold Point is this gentleman that showed us around used to work in high management at McDonald's and decided that that wasn't for him anymore and ended up in the middle of nowhere in the Nevada desert. Him and a buddy of his started buying up properties. He told us they paid $500 a lot for the first few places that they bought in Gold Point and found out later that they had overpaid dramatically. So Gold Point is a cool place to go visit. Probably 100 or so people living there. We stopped in Gold Field, probably one of the most famous spots along Highway 95 there. Gold Field is a place like Rhyolite around the turn of the previous century that had about 15 years in the sun. And Gold Point has more people in it now than some of the other ghost towns, probably 400 or 500 people. The Chamber of Commerce baked ghost cookies for our folks and were great hospitality, got a couple of little stores open and stuff so we could talk to some of the local people. Goldfield is a place to stop. Whether or not you're going to find shops and stores open, when I'm calling ahead and saying I have 30 visitors with money hanging out of our pockets and we'd like to stop in your town, then that's a little bit of incentive. You driving through in a car is going to be a little bit more hit and miss. So if you go when the temperatures are good, then you'll have a better chance of running into people. Temperatures are good are relative because when you're in Rhyolite, that's Death Valley temperatures in Beatty. You start to get up to Gold Point and Gold Field, you start to climb in elevation, so good temperatures there are a little bit different. You head on to Tonopah, where we spent two nights, and you're going to find that temperatures in Tonopah are a lot different. That's the high desert, and you're up about 5,000-6,000 feet, and the temperatures got into the low to mid-30s the two nights that we were there. Tonopah is a neat town. The Mizpah Hotel and the Belvada across the street, which are both run by the same company, are historic old hotels. The Mizpah is terribly haunted. They have a ghost tour there. They will tell you about the kid. A housekeeper brought their children to work one day, and somebody came in and they stuck the kids in the icebox. And so, tragically, somebody forgot they were in there until it was too late. The kids died. Their ghosts now play on the second and third floor of the hotel. At the Mizpah, they have an elevator operator who is a ghost named Walter, who sometimes doesn't take people to the floor that they punch in the elevator, or refuses to close the door, or other miscellaneous little things. And the employees of the hotel talk about these things as though they're everyday occurrences, because they are. And whether you attribute them to something else or you attribute them to ghostly figures in the hotel, a very famous lady of the evening was murdered in the hotel tragically years ago, and her ghost is said to still haunt the hotel. There are a number of others at the Mizpah. You can stay there, or as I said, across the street, the Belvada has been redone more recently. And so it doesn't have some of the little quirks that the Mizpah has. You know, you're liable to wake up to no hot water in the morning, or you can't figure out how to get the TV on, or the phone doesn't work, or there's some little quirky thing. The Belvada, a little bit more modern because it's been fixed up a little bit more recently. We took an odd day and went out to Belmont, Nevada. That was cool to see the old courthouse out there. The thing that wasn't cool is it was kind of cold and windy. We got close to Belmont, which is 1,000 feet above Tonopah, and it started to snow. And first it was just snow flurries. We got to the old courthouse. The folks went in. The people in this little town, about 100 of them who are still there, have fixed up the outside of the courthouse to protect it from the weather. The inside still has a long ways to go. So we were in. They were telling us stories. We were looking at it. It started snowing a little harder, and I decided that since we had a bus that didn't have chains, we probably needed to get out of Dodge before the snow got too deep and we got someplace where we couldn't. So we left Belmont. But really worth a side trip if you go to Tonopah, is going up to Belmont. The Mitzpah is a great place not only to stay, but you can eat there. On the way back, we stopped in Rachel and traveled the extraterrestrial highway near Area 51. So we got to talk about ghosts who are already gone and ghosts who might live in the sky and land on the planet from time to time. All kinds of interesting characters. If you're ever looking for a place that has a variety of cool things to do and you are into ghosts, you've watched some of this stuff on TV and you feel like that you're ready to go out and explore where ghosts might be, then I really recommend Southwestern Nevada. It's a lot of fun. Las Vegas is my least favorite city on like the whole planet. But a lot of people love going there and they love to gamble there and see shows and stuff. I think everybody is trying to cheat everybody else in Las Vegas. We stayed at the Golden Nugget downtown. It's not as much of my favorite hotel as it used to be. But downtown is a very different place than the Strip. If you're going to gamble, stay downtown. The limits are lower. It's a little more friendly. If you're going for entertainment, then you can, or pizzazz, I guess you can go out on the Strip. Anyway, that is my review of Ghost Towns of Old Nevada.
That was great, Mark. I enjoyed every minute of that. Thank you so much. All right, we are the Travel and Entertainment Guys, brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations. Have you ever used one of those charging stations like at an airport? Not necessarily the safest thing you can do. We'll talk about that and the latest survey. What's the hottest and best airline and what's not? That's next here on The Travel Guys. Hey there, Mark and Tom with you, The Travel and Entertainment Guys. Don't forget, check us out at travelguysradio.com. All right, Mark, you know, I've never used a public charging station. I see them all the time at the Golden One Arena. Mm-hmm. People standing by them with their phones plugged in. So what's the deal?
Well,
especially the ones at the airport.
Well, this is the deal. We had a warning on this from a consumer group about a month ago, and now the FBI has followed up with a warning of their own based on that initial warning from the consumer group, and saying that indeed they are finding cases where, now this is really, really, really important to listen carefully here. Because this involves USB ports. This is where, not where you stick the charger into an electrical outlet and your phone is plugged into the charger unit and then into your phone.
Understood.
So those are safe, or at least so far have proven safe. What we're specifically talking here is when you take the other end of the cord from the one that plugs into your phone, and you stick the end of that cord directly into the charging unit, in the USB port. That is where the FBI is saying there is evidence that in several major airports that people have gone into and got hacked into those USB ports, and in as little as a minute after you plug your phone in and activate it, that they can start downloading important information from your phone, that the FBI says they have instances where this has occurred. But it's important to note that the only instances where it has occurred is where people have plugged their USB cord directly into the charging unit. So if you're using, it appears as though, and I'm not a technology guy, so I'm just going off of the original story we reported on several weeks ago, and this FBI update, which was a story in the Washington Post that I can't post for you to read because the Washington Post has a firewall. So, but if you go online and you Google FBI public phone chargers, then you may very well get access to this article, and it explains in pretty good detail why the FBI is putting out this alert and why they're concerned about it. And I think that it's really important for you to know that there's a difference here, that it's the USB port that they're talking about plugging in. You see these now also in hotel rooms. The FBI is saying in places that aren't as public, like hotel rooms, they haven't seen this coming up yet, but where they're seeing it more, which makes sense because a bad guy can have access to things in an airport with a lot of people walking around. And if you were trying to get into some of these USB ports, I'm guessing that would be fairly easy to do in a public place. It would be a lot harder to do in a non-public place, like a, you know, a doctor's office that just happened to have this charger available to you, probably is a lot safer than an airport. But if you're using USB charging ports in public places, the more public they are, the more risk you're taking that you might be exposing your phone to something that to something malicious that could down the road prove to be a problem for you. Does that make sense?
Right. Yeah. For heaven's sakes, is nothing safe anymore? Well, there you go. That's why perhaps having your own charging brick that you take with you that is capable of recharging your phone several times between the beginning of your journey and when you arrive might be your best option. I know a lot of people got very excited when they found out that they didn't have to have an electrical plug with you know, the little block that you plug your USB in and looking for an AC outlet to be able to charge your phone. These USB ports that were put here, there, and everywhere were just so convenient. So everybody just kind of globbing onto that technology, as always, like we do, willy-nilly, without really thinking it through. All right, let's talk about, for our last item here on the Travel Guys for today, Wallet Hub tells us that what the survey says, best or worst airlines.
Well, first of all, they say, before we tell you what is best or worst, airline ticket prices have gone up an average of 25% over the last year. So if you figure that inflation has been, now that it's started to come down some over the last year over year, I don't know exactly, but let's call it 7-8%. So airlines are up airfares are up 25%, but it's not across the board. Some destinations are up more than others. Okay. What did the survey say are the best airlines in the sky? Domestic airline, best domestic airline, second year in a row, Delta Airlines. Now, it's important to know the best score out of 100 was 66.79. So in most industries that Wallet Hub surveys, the best score comes out to something in the 80 percentile. So airline, the best airline is scoring in the middle of the 60th percentile. So that maybe gives you a little bit of an idea. To be the best airline doesn't take much. Surprisingly, Spirit Airlines finished second to Delta and not by very much. So, you know, we regularly talk about Spirit and Frontier being ultra low-cost carriers that fly out of Sacramento and some of the reasons that you perhaps don't want to fly them. But Spirit, in this case, scored very well. Delta also is the most reliable. They have the lowest overall rate of cancellations, delays, mishandled luggage, and denied boardings. The next most reliable airline in those categories is United. So if you want to make sure they let you get on the plane and they don't lose your bag and they're going to be on time and they're not going to cancel your flight, then it goes Delta, United in that order. On the bottom, American and Frontier, both in service and in overall ratings. Safety, this is really kind of a tough one. Envoy Air, which is an American Airlines feeder airline, was the best in terms of accidents, fatalities, and injuries between 2017 and 2022. It's important to note that one accident can really screw that up, so that's kind of tough. Most pet-friendly airlines, Delta, SkyWest, and Alaska. Most comfortable, JetBlue, because of the extra seating. Worst airlines, overall, American and Frontier.
Where's our friends at Southwest?
In the middle, on almost all of these things, exactly in the middle.
Well, there you go. Well, all right, there it is. Everything you needed to know, or at least some of the stuff, to make you a smarter traveler. Mark Hoffman and Tom Romano with you. Thanks for coming along. Don't forget, Chris Elliott's going to join us next week.
Yeah, that's going to be exciting. He's going to talk about our airlines and other people pushing the self-service things too far. In the meantime, dance like nobody's watching.
Thank you, my friend. You stay well. We'll see you next time right here on The Travel Guys. Bye for now.